Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the 3rd of November, the day after the midterms. And as promised, we devote a full 2 hours to the results of those midterm elections and welcome your phone calls. We want to take a lot of phone calls because this is one of those days that you want to talk about what happened. And we talked about what was going to happen for a long, long time. So today we'll open the phone lines pretty early. We're going to concentrate on what happened in the state of Wisconsin. The first hour of our program today, and then the second hour of the show, we will look more at what happened in various national races. I think it is safe to say that very big things happened here in Wisconsin yesterday, and that Wisconsin is a much redder state today. We'll be looking at what happened in the Assembly and in the Senate in the state, what happened with congressional races that will send people to Washington, of course, what happened in the governor's race, and what the people of Wisconsin were saying. We have two guests with us the first hour of our program. We'll be speaking with Margaret Farrow. She is a former member of the state Senate from 1989 to 2001, lieutenant governor of the state from 2001 to 2003, and she also served in the state assembly from 1986 to 1989. So she has a pretty keen grasp of what's been going on in politics in the state of Wisconsin for quite some time now. Margaret Farrow, hello. Thank you very much for being with us.
Good morning, Kathleen.
Good morning. Do you mind if I call you Margaret? It's my favorite name.
That's fine. Please.
Okay. I love the name Margaret.
I do, too.
Good. Good.
My mother used to call me Peg, and so when I had to put it on a ballot, I became Margaret officially, and I let it stick because I also like the name.
Yeah. Sheila Cochran is also joining us, Chief Operating Officer and Secretary Treasurer of the Milwaukee Area Labor Council. Sheila, thank you so much for being with us. Hello, Sheila.
Oh, hi.
Hi. Hi. Thanks very much. Do you know Margaret?
We've actually met via telephone a couple of times.
All right.
Hello, Sheila. How are you?
Well,
I'm fine. Thank you.
Here you are meeting by telephone again this morning.
Right.
And we have a ton of people who are already calling in. Let's just talk about generally, Wisconsin is a red state today. How did it happen, Margaret?
I think it happened because of the situation people found themselves in because of jobs. I think jobs is something that is right in front of everyone sitting at their kitchen table and trying to figure out how they're going to pay the mortgage and how they're being affected very, very personally by the economy. I also think it happened because both Governor Doyle and President Obama really overreached. They really hammered away on what they were going to do and didn't give much sideways glance at what the people were saying, what polls were saying, people were thinking and feeling and needing. And I think that it was breathtaking. I mean, as you mentioned, I've been I fell in love with government policy as something philosophically that was important in sixth grade civics class. So I've been following what we do in the polling booth for a long time, and I don't think I've ever seen the people become the leaders as they have in this race.
Sheila, how did Wisconsin become so red?
Well, I agree partially with what Lieutenant Governor Farrell
say
said.
Say Margaret, please, Sheila.
I'm sorry.
It's easier.
We're calling her Margaret today. We like the name.
Margaret. And just let me say congratulations. Obviously, you know, I am a firm believer, as Margaret said. I grew up with a lot of civics classes as well. And I understand what it means to be the loyal opposition, and that's where I find myself this morning. And quite frankly, I think that the people did speak, and this was a course correction. I may not agree totally with the analysis. However, I will say that jobs was in the forefront of it. I think we've seen tough economic times before, but we have not seen times like this, at least not in my lifetime. And I think that when people are this destitute, and this angry about the circumstance, as Margaret said, that they find themselves in, they speak up. I don't know about the overreaching, in as much as I will agree that I don't think the messages that were coming out of our national leadership and even in some of our local leadership were as cohesive and forward as they should have been or as strong, and that is always a problem. We've all learned a lot more. I mean, message framing is critical. And I can just say that for those of us who do this and work with groups of people in electoral politics, we always see these corrections. So this will be a struggle, most certainly, but it's always an opportunity where we have challenges.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's look at the job situation for a moment. It obviously was the issue all over the country. And people who are hurting, who may have lost their jobs, who have seen industries move out of state, people who have seen their paychecks cut or who have furloughs, there are a lot of people hurting. So I don't think that anybody's going to be given too much time to change things here. And I'm wondering a couple things. One is, will we see a very different plan for how to spark the economy? And two, will the Republicans and Democrats have to, and will they get together to give us the plan to spark that economy? Margaret?
I think we'll definitely see a different plan. I think the advantage we have, and we would have had it with either of the gubernatorial candidates, is that they have experienced and been part of a legislative process so that they know what it takes, that they just don't flip a switch and something happens. They know it has to be a team build up to whatever they want to accomplish. And I think Walker clearly has that in his sights and realizing he's got to work with the legislature. And but I think the interesting thing is right toward the end now of his emergence into his lame duck period as governor, suddenly Governor Doyle began to use tax credits as something that would help Bucyrus or something that would help Quad Graphics. And the question is, if it was good for them and those jobs, why isn't a similar type of tax credit concept be important for our small businesses, because they are the backbone of our Wisconsin economy? So I think you're going to see that type of thing happen, but at the same time have to be paid for by a cut in spending, a responsible cut in spending. And I think that's where we're going to immediately see the switch and the tide begin to turn. And I think Governor-elect Walker has made it clear he's going to call a special session as an emergency session to deal with the jobs crisis.
Mm-hmm. We'll talk more about cut in spending in a moment. Sheila, what do you think about jobs?
Well, certainly they are extraordinarily important, and I agree that we have to have some kind of cooperation, and I think that this is what I have seen lacking. You can't govern unless you are really looking at both sides of the equation. It just doesn't work, and you can only push so hard. And so, you know, if what Margaret said before about the overreaching and the far-reaching on one side versus the other, you know, the one thing I did notice is I like to see political figures with some courage. I like to see them really take on something and do it.
Mm-hmm.
So no matter what people might think about policies that were passed in Washington or even policies that were passed in the state, as long as someone actually takes hold of something and begin to actually try and do something, I think people can either forgive you for a mistake that you may have done that they felt wasn't a good one, or, you know, react just the opposite direction when there's something that they didn't like. But when there is a lack of cooperation, you know, when people just say no, 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 or, you know, no matter what you try, it doesn't work, that is when people get totally frustrated. And I think that they spoke to that frustration, and I hope that Governor-elect Walker really thinks about that as we go forward. Because when you have control of both houses, you also have the tendency, and I hope that this does not happen, to just begin to drive forward an agenda and not take in consideration the opposition and what they might think about those things. So there still has to be a lot of cooperation, even though the Republicans clearly have the upper hand in the state.
Could I just add
yes,
to that?
Yes, of course, Margaret.
Kathleen, I was part of the Senate that I was in went Republican for the first time in 20-some years, and the next two-year session, the Assembly followed and went Republican. So Governor Thompson at that time had both houses finally on his side of the aisle. I would say that doesn't make for automatic agreement.
Well,
so you can have good internal discussions and debates because nothing is, immediately everyone just doesn't fall down and say, oh, we agree with everything. It is still scrutinized, and often the minority party becomes part of the debate as a result. And I agree with you. I think there's some very thoughtful people. Quite frankly, I'm looking forward to the reemergence of Senator Tim Cullen in the Senate, who's come back. And I was in local government when he was majority leader in the Senate, and I saw him as a very capable majority leader, not capable to get his agenda forward in the Senate, state Senate, but to also be very open to the opposition and to run a very civil House. And I think that's one of the reasons he came back, quite frankly, because he certainly didn't need it.
Right. Let's talk about this cut in spending, because it seems as though that is something that will happen. It's probably something that those who won yesterday have already looked at least semi-carefully. Where can we do that in the state of Wisconsin? Where are the likely cuts?
Who do you want to start?
Let's start with you, Margaret.
I think there are all sorts of ways that we can deliver services, and you know what I would do is begin to talk to those who deliver the services. We often have in our workplaces people who, because they are never asked, do not share or are not in a position to restructure how the job is being done. And I think one of the things that I would like to see happen is be able to listen to the employees of state government and say, we're not going to be able to give you the budget you had last time. You help us understand how to make it work for you as an employee to make it efficient and to have you feel you're getting the same quality of work out the door, but for the taxpayers that they're able to survive with that service and yet not have it tax them right out of the state. I think that often we've seen that in areas. The city of Indianapolis became a single government with county and city government and went to an efficiency level with many of their own employee groups defining it. And when asked why they hadn't done it before, they said nobody asked us or it was never in our job description. So I think a lot of what can be done in our delivery of service is literally letting the employees help design how it can be done better.
Sheila, what do you think?
Well, obviously, the state of Wisconsin has an awful lot of employees, and a lot of them are members of organized labor. And I would sincerely hope that as scrutiny is being done on how things are going to be cut, and I cannot answer that question because that is fortunately and unfortunately something that a lot of people are going to have to take some hits on. And so I do believe that I saw something where Scott Walker wanted to cut 4,000 employees. I don't exactly know where those 4,000 employees are coming from. So in Margaret's analogy, where you would ask the employees or work with them, I hope that that would be the tact before someone would just go through and slash without knowing or with an assumption of some knowledge and not understand exactly what the effect was. Because the one thing that we all know, and I think that what I am probably and a lot of others are going to be looking at, is a cause and effect of how you cut. I mean, there's always an intended consequence and an unintended consequence of cutting service. And we have seen that in Milwaukee County, and it has not always been the best for the county. So I would hope that that does not get replicated at the state and that there is some serious consideration in looking very carefully at how to do those types of cuts without damaging the services that the state of Wisconsin has become more than, over all these years, wanted to expect from its government. So I hope that that is the case, where we're going to be thoughtful in how we do these things. And I most certainly know that those representatives of the unions who work along with our state government are going to be very carefully monitoring.
We have many people who would like to speak with both of you and give their response to the elections yesterday, and we have a lot of emails coming in as well, so we'll hop right to those momentarily. We're talking about the elections, looking first at the statewide races, and Wisconsin had some significant changes as a result of yesterday, a much more red state today. They have a new governor, Scott Walker. Both the Senate and the Assembly, and a number of state legislative, congressional races, U.S. congressional races as well. So we are talking this hour with Margaret Farrow. Margaret is a former state senator and former member of the Wisconsin Assembly, also former lieutenant governor of the state of Wisconsin. Sheila Cochran is also with us, chief operating officer and secretary treasurer of the Milwaukee Area Labor Council. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Second hour of our program this Wednesday, we'll be looking at what happened nationally yesterday, and our guest, Carl Lubsdorf, columnist for the Dallas Morning News. He is quite the newspaper guy. He was, he's been doing this work for a long, long time and has been to 23 national conventions and covered every presidential election since 1960. He's written about John Kennedy, Lyndon Johnson, Richard Nixon, Gerald Ford, Jimmy Carter, Ronald Reagan, George Bush, Bill Clinton, George W. Bush, and Barack Obama, and he has this long history of writing and insightful analysis of what has happened, what did happen, and maybe even what will happen. All right, let's go to phone calls for our guests. 800-486-8655 is our number, and let's go to Tom for our first call. Hi, Tom.
Hi, good morning. One of the things you talked about, one of the things I was interested in discussing, and that was what is really we could cut from our budget and what Scott Walker should be looking at. But I want more meat and potatoes in that respect than just cutting employees. What is the big budget items that need to be cut in Wisconsin? The other thing is when you give businesses, try to stimulate the business economy by giving businesses tax deductions, and they bring in low-wage jobs, I can't see you're spending money just like Obama was spending money to get the banks out. Does that really work? And if so, give me a good example of how it did work in Wisconsin or any other place. And the third thing is I think Scott Walker should look at getting some Air Force bases and Army bases just like Texas, because they spend a ton of money in your state and really make your state not have to tax the people so much.
All right. Thanks, Tom, for your call. Margaret.
Well, I think the tax credit, it's a valid question that Tom raises, but I would point to Outboard Marine up in Fond du Lac, where some tax credits and other things were given, and that was to keep good paying jobs and not to have them leave, and to expand because they consolidated their other plant. I'm not sure, I want to say it was in Missouri or somewhere, that they consolidated here as a result of that. The other one is the jobs at Bucyrus. I mean, they're looking for welders, they're looking for engineers, they're looking for everyone as they're expanding with the mining industries around the world, and to meet that need. And those are very, very good paying jobs. The Quad Graphics as a place to work, I believe their jobs are very good paying. They have wonderful on-site medical. They have their own medical staff that is available to their employees rather than going out to other medical providers. And there's a number of things that are an advantage there. So I think the examples I was giving already shows that you can have the tax credits go to jobs with wages that are definitely family-supporting wages and career-building wages.
And what about more military money in the state of Wisconsin?
Well, first of all, we're getting a lot out of the defense budget, which, you know, often people want to take a hit at till they realize, wait a minute, those are our bases, as Tom said, or our manufacturers supplying that equipment. I mean, Oshkosh Truck, for example, is getting an incredible amount of federal dollars brought into the state and the jobs that are developed, because they have developed the types of equipment that keep our troops safe in places like Iraq. And so I think we have a number. The problem with the base concept, we had one going in Racine that was scuttled many years ago and is now a park down in the Bong Recreation Area, but in Racine County. But you also then have a placement problem. You know, we suddenly developed the NIMBY concept. We don't want that airbase here because they fly big jets in, or we don't want this or that. But I can't see a lot of base development. We certainly have some already. We have some wonderfully internationally used. Volk Field right now is used by Air Force entities from all around the world in our ally-type links with people because of the simulated manner in which they train people up there. It's a story that rarely is told. It's fascinating. So we have activity, but I just don't see the federal bases as a way, but I do see the need to bring more of our federal tax dollars back here in general, instead of having them just hand us more mandates. You asked about what's the highest part of our budget. Well, the highest part of our budget right now is Medicare and Medicaid. Our Medicaid that we have expanded at state decisions over the years is our biggest budget problem in terms of the amount. And it sits at the top of the whole pecking order of where we have to put dollars. And we have little control over that except for the state-determined add-ons that we've done.
Mm-hmm. Sheila, let me play what if. I don't want to do this too much, except that the president is going to obviously have to address the jobs issue at noon today when he gives his address responding to the elections. There are a lot of Democrats who are saying today, who are playing the what-if game and had criticized the president for taking on health care instead of taking on jobs. As you know, a lot of economists like Paul Krugman and others were saying the stimulus was way too small. We needed a massive public works job because the situation was really dire in this country, and that the president should have gone that direction. As we look now 2 years into his presidency, do you think that they were right, that he should have taken on jobs? And B, what kind of vision do you see for the creation of jobs, issue number one, in the state of Wisconsin?
Well, I agree with the economist. I think that stimulus package was too small. And I know that there are those people who would probably have a fit about that. But the point, in fact, is if you're really going to stimulate the economy, and if the government is going to be the only person, or the only group, I should say, that comes forward to do it, it should have been large enough to really let people know that they felt it. And part of the problem with the stimulus from the very first was that it came through the existing funding streams of government, and that takes a very long time to feel. So where jobs are the leading indicator of anything coming back, and when you have that long a time and people still don't understand it, or they don't feel it, or it hasn't been shown to them, or whatever the case might be, that becomes a problem in itself. And that obviously was one of the things. And even when the gentleman asked the question about jobs, that became it. It was like, well, where are they? And a lot of times, I mean, here in the city of Milwaukee, we had to say to people, this road, this highway, this project, the only reason it's happening is because of stimulus dollars. And so people who, for instance, got the tax cut, they didn't know it, they didn't feel it, mm-hmm. they forgot about it. Mm-hmm. So it has to be large enough to generate the activity that is necessary. I think, quite frankly, that the president was kind of between a rock and a hard place with the health care bill. Gone out there, said that was your number one priority. But, I mean, if we think about it, and this has been ringing through my head over the past 6 or 7 months, it is the economy. And sometimes we get very stupid when we decide, okay, this is the promise that we made, and this is the way we were going to go. And then we can't correct because we understand the process of legislation. So I think he was bound to the process that he started, but most certainly I think that there should have been a huge push for those jobs. And the announcement that he made when he was here in Milwaukee, for instance, about, you know, the new program or the project that he wants to do, that was huge. I mean, every single solitary person, whether they agree on transportation or not, everyone understands that we have to be a mobile society, not only physically, but these days in hyperspace. And so the infrastructure is our, I mean, this is the huge, at least in my estimation, the huge opportunity for jobs. It also, going back to what the gentleman said about the military, I mean, when I look at, and I had career military uncles and family members who served this country like everyone else did, but their uniforms, from the shoestrings to the boots to the hats, the helmets, everything, was made here in this country. And it really infuriates me that when we begin to talk about jobs and we want to do good jobs and we want those things that we know we need to do, that we don't supply all of those things that our military really requires here. So I think there are opportunities there, and those would be manufacturing facilities.
Hmm.
I come out of manufacturing. I firmly believe that in order for a society to grow, you have to have a balance in jobs. Yes, we have to have paper pushers, and I think I've become one in my latter years. But you also have to have people that make something. There is an appreciation and an understanding, and there's also an upward mobility in trying to go from one manufacturing type of industry to the next. There are reasons why Bucyrus International is as successful as it is. Aside from the fact that it has a CEO with a lot of vision, it also has a CEO that understood when he left those jobs here in the city of Milwaukee and the state of Wisconsin that those jobs were here because this was where you had a Class A workforce. And I think that we don't look at that enough. And so I would sincerely hope that as we go forward, that if the president is going to work in cooperation, and I heard what incoming Speaker Boehner said this morning or last evening. I'm somewhat confused.
Yeah, I know. We've been up a long time.
A very long time. But the point, in fact, is at a national level, I hope that the Republican Party understands that they cannot be the party of no and not have the same whiplash happen in 2012. Somewhere along the line, and I think that's the only message I have this morning is somewhere along the line, there's got to be cooperation between these two entities, between these parties, to make a difference. Because the only thing that happens if they don't is we whipsaw back and forth from, be it every 2 years or the down-ballot races that we lose in between. Somewhere along the line, you've got to cooperate. Somewhere there has got to be someone that says, look, if you can set aside the politics long enough, can we at least agree on these things? And it starts at the federal, local, in between, because when I look at politics, and I sit here in Milwaukee, all of these politics are local. And these jobs that are lost, when I leave out of my front door, yeah, I only go two or three blocks, and I see decimated areas where we had manufacturing. And so there's a price to be paid when you decide that those are the things that you're not going to do.
Mm-hmm. Margaret, this is an interesting area. Let me just ask you about this, and then we'll go back to phone calls. What about those jobs that have left Wisconsin because, and you understand that they're going so that they can make their product less expensively? Is there a plan to keep some of those companies here? What would keep people here rather than going somewhere else?
Well, I think the job climate, the climate here has to be one of an open hand rather than the back of the hand. I think, you know, we're seeing local governments that I think should work with state government to keep jobs. I just noticed, for example, not a lot of jobs, but in downtown Milwaukee, the council, the alderman had just said, we don't want a Marriott hotel for this reason or that reason. Oh, I know, it was going to tear down some older, they claim, historical buildings. And yet it was going to develop jobs and develop more of the tourist trade accommodations that would bring more dollars to the city. I think we have to have across the board cooperation. And I think where people say, the jobs have gone to Mexico or India or China, and they're looking to keep their costs down. One of the things that we have to do is find ways to have those jobs stay here, meet the environmental standards, which is a lot of it besides just the hourly wage issue that is the cost, and yet you know, be creative. We're finding how to green up some of these things that otherwise were arbitrarily said, well, you can't do that here. I mean, we have the highest mining standards in the country, for example, and the Ladysmith mine, which was open for 18 months, proved you could mine here safely and very, very much in a way accommodating what we want as our environment and having it preserved. So I think we have to look at those sorts of things with scrubbers on smokestacks and everything else, rather than just dismissing them, put onerous regulations on and say, get out of here because we don't like the waste product coming out of your plant. Let's work with them to get the waste product cleaned up so they can stay here and we can keep those jobs here.
Let's go to Dan from La Crosse. Hi, Dan.
Yeah, I think that the Democrats lost because of a problem, a failure of framing. Okay, they should have, from the word go, said and illustrated how the Republicans are the party of the rich and big business, and how the Democrats will go to bat for the little guy. Let me give you an example. For instance, when the Republicans were talking about the mischaracterizing the Gundersen Lutheran end-of-life discussion, you know, reimbursing doctors for end-of-life discussions as death panels, Obama could have gone and said, oh, okay, well, let me show you what a death panel is, and taken them to, like, the Pink Palace in downtown Louisville, the headquarters of Humana Insurance, showing them the wonderful marble, wonderful artwork that is in the hallways of that august building in downtown Louisville, and showing them how many, how rich that building is and how many claims were denied in order to build that building. And, the same thing when they say, taxes are too onerous and everything on little businesses and big businesses, and that'll drive away jobs. And, well, let me show you what happened when a city or municipality gave company tax breaks so that they'd stay, and they picked up and went to Taiwan anyway after the city gave them the tax breaks. So they missed an opportunity in framing, and besides, the health care bill was like the Medicare Part D bill giveaway to the insurance companies, mandating that everyone purchase insurance.
All right, Dan, thanks very much. Sheila, let's give that one to you.
Well, I think that, a lot of that I agree with. I said that framing was an issue and that messaging was an issue. But, I've had the pleasure of being in the presence of the president. And I know we often say, he could say this and he could say that. But I can say this. How do you even get that to him? How does that very simple message get to him? I know he has ways of reaching out and has wanted to do that as far as the bubble and trying to get some grassroots messaging out. And I think that works to a degree. But again, it's not just his responsibility. There is a responsibility of organization and of the constant echoing of a message. And I think that has been lost with this, just conglomeration of large media and the 24-hour cycle. It is very hard, I think, to break through. And there are those that would argue, I heard that argument this morning, that, he's got the bully pulpit and he can do it. But there's just so often, I think, and so much that you can expect out of a less than two-year presidency. So we had a lot on the plate, and I think that it's going to take a lot more. I listened carefully last night. I think I can't characterize it exactly the way he said it, but and we haven't mentioned anything about Senator-elect coming in. John.
No, we're going to get to that. So let's get to it.
But anyway, he did say something about, getting elected. You get that first election under you, and then it's election after election. And I said, so now that it's going to be Senator Johnson, it has to be multiple years in order to get something done. So if you look at President Obama, the most impactful thing that I think I heard over the last 6 months was when he was in Milwaukee and he said, it's only been 18 months. And so to have been given the incredible load that he came in office under, all of that that was going on, it was as if everything that happened those years prior was totally dismissed. It's all his. He took ownership for it. Work it out. You didn't do it fast enough. Mm-hmm. So it's that is a huge issue, I think, that when people begin to look back at this, and if they really sit back and look at it, is how did that get lost?
Let's go to that Senate race, to the victory, Ron Johnson's victory, and let me go to an email. Margaret, let's start with you on this. This email is from Mark in Mequon, who is concerned. He called Wisconsin voters short-sighted to trade an independent and influential senator for a no-name freshman senator of the minority party who will be at the back of the line being told by the leadership when and how to vote. He goes on, some of my coworkers and many Wisconsin residents believe that he is going to change Washington politics and have a big impact for Wisconsin. He will be a nameless, faceless person locked in GOP vote and have no impact whatsoever. I think a lot of Democrats were hard hit by the Feingold laws. Can you respond to that?
Sure. And I served with Russ Feingold in the state Senate, so I know him from those years. I would challenge that he was a powerful U.S. senator. What did he accomplish for our state? He was known clearly by his by the rest of the delegation as not cooperating with them often when they were looking to do something for Wisconsin very specifically. He was, again, the rebel, the maverick with his own membership, his own colleagues. He did campaign finance reform. Everybody will say, well, look, he did campaign finance reform. Most of the key parts of that bill are no longer effective, have been declared unconstitutional, and the one thing it did do was give us the 527s. That are now in everybody's eyes suddenly this rotation as seen as kind of evil because we don't know where the money came from. And that started with the George Soros type mentality. That came out of the McCain-Feingold Act that they found. It's kind of like squeezing a balloon. If you squeeze it somewhere, it's going to pop out another place. And they put the kind of tightened down some of the campaign money control, and it shot out another way through the 527 independent groups. I do not think that Senator Feingold has been that effective for our state, quite frankly. I think Ron Johnson, now Senator-elect Johnson, is going to bring a totally different attitude, and I don't think he's looking for a long longevity for himself, Sheila. I think what he was saying is everything has an evolution to it. Everything has to be worked through. Some of what President Obama found it as the situation when he got there certainly has to take a number of years to move as kind of, you know, swinging the Queen Mary or the Queen Elizabeth in the ocean. You don't do it instantly. But I think the point is he was saying we've got to take those incremental steps to correct where we're at now as a nation with our economy, with our international affairs and everything else. I am very weary of President Obama blaming the Bush years for all that we have, because some of what we are living with is an evolution of problems that developed going as far back as President Carter, coming through all bipartisan, coming through all the evolution that we have had since then. So I think what Senator-elect Johnson was now saying was, I'm not wanting to be out there term after term, but what we're doing cannot just be flipped overnight.
Sheila, do you want to give a quick response? We'll go back to phone calls on Feingold.
Well, I'll just say that between Jimmy Carter and George Bush, I think we did have a surplus that George Bush got rid of. So go figure.
Let's go next to George in Mequon. Hi, George.
Yes, good morning. A couple things. An earlier caller mentioned the bank bailout and called it Obama's. That was passed under the Bush administration, period, end of sentence. Number two, can Margaret Farrow specifically discuss the structural deficit in the Wisconsin state budget? I believe it goes back to Lee Sherman Dreyfus was the first. And it continued certainly toward the latter part of Tommy Thompson's administration. And this, again, is a structural. When they passed the budget, they knew there was going to be a deficit. Explain how that happened.
All right, Margaret.
Sure. I would say you could probably look back further than that. In the way it develops is that to be able, there is a requirement that the Wisconsin budget within each quarter of the year has to be balanced. And there's a requirement if the revenue inflow and the spending outflow do not match, you're supposed to come into session and correct that within the quarter, not wait half a year or a year or to the next term. That has become, well, and that's where we got our extra cent of sales tax from 4 to 5 under the Dreyfus years, as you just said, and because that correction had to be made, and because of the economy and because of spending and all. Since then, there has been a slippage in how quickly the legislature deals with it or the governor reacts to it. And what happened during the Thompson years, for example, was a very healthy, robust economy, both in Wisconsin, the country, and the world as it was growing. And there was a lot of spending that would be committed to not begin and emerge on the balance sheet quarterly in the next biennium. So when a budget was passed, they'd say, well, we're not going to start that program now, but we'll start it when the next budget is developed. And so you go into that next budget with a hole to fill because you already have committed some dollars. And that structurally has a deficit. It doesn't affect the balance sheet of the quarter you're in, but you know it's out there like a ticking time bomb. And when the national economy went sour and we had 9/11 and we had all sorts of other things, that's where in the McCallum last 2 years of the Thompson era, everything hit the fan, quite frankly, and we went into a very difficult structural deficit because the revenues had fallen off so dramatically. And quite frankly, we're still recovering from that. But that's the structural deficit that's in there. To stop that, we have to stop budgeting with new spending, pushing it out into the next budget. We have to become very realistic, start with a zero-based budgeting, justify everything we're doing, and benchmark that it's going to be used. When I was in the legislature, for example, there were 136 programs for drug and alcohol abuse treatment. No one tested which one was affected. No one said, there's where we really should prioritize our money because here's where the effect is being gained from it. And we have to begin to see where our programs and our dollars are being spent to get the effect the people of the state want from their taxes being spent in this manner or that manner.
Thanks, George, for the call. We have an email about redistricting, which is an important issue, and we'll get to that in a moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our number two of our program this day after the midterms, we'll look at what happened nationally. And our guest, former Washington Bureau Chief of the Dallas Morning News, he's covered every president since John Kennedy. He was elected 50 years ago. Can you believe that? 50 years ago this week. He writes a weekly column for the Dallas Morning News right now and for its website. And so he will be with us, our number two of the program. Quick question on redistricting. Let's have this one go to you first, Sheila. This is from Nate in Milwaukee. Wisconsin voters have switched which party has been in control frequently, including both Assembly and Senate, belonging to the different parties at different times while Doyle was governor. Gerrymandering may freeze this trend in the GOP's favor for 10 years. I wonder if there will be a backlash over time.
Well, I think it might be. I don't know, obviously. I mean, this for me is the issue I think that hit home very hard this morning. And when I got to thinking about it, because even though Milwaukee might be the city of the first class, it is absolutely no secret in the state of Wisconsin that we're often neglected. I would hope that we don't get the stick-it-to-it mentality that we had at one point in time, and that since governor-elect comes from Milwaukee and Milwaukee County, that when these lines are redrawn, and we obviously know where the power will lie, that we aren't damaged too poorly when it comes to our own representation. You know, there's been loss, obviously, and these are the things that you deal with. And, yes, it will have a long-term effect, but we'll only,
you know, be there to see the outcome of it at this point in time.
Mark in Oconomowoc, hi.
Hi. I have to get my glasses. It's unusual, first of all, that, you know, I get on the phone and there's Sheila, Kathleen, and Margaret. But anyway.
What's so unusual?
Well, the three Irish girls. Okay.
I never thought of that one.
At any rate. I live in Oconomowoc, and they had a road project out here. And for me, it's been a hot-button thing, although I've noticed when I talked to somebody a couple days ago, I didn't get angry. And, like, when we were young, I always thought that roads in Wisconsin were really good, and I don't think that so much anymore. And so I bring this up in terms of cost, well, the cost issues. First of all, in Oconomowoc, they built this bypass that's probably at 5-10% capacity, and that went through on the Republicans, and it was, you know, everybody said it was a great thing, and then what just recently happened was on Highway 16 west of the Four Corners downtown, they had to rebuild it out to where the bypass resumed, and the where the Highway 16 crossed the river from there west. I think the road project cost 90% more than it should have. They took a road bed that was good, that was probably over 50 years, maybe 60, 70 years old, and they replaced a 13-inch thick slab with 7 inches. And, I mean, they completely destroyed the old road, and it's just so frustrating. You know, you go on bad roads somewhere, and then they took something that's good, and there was technology that, you know, they could have done like what they did on an earlier road project where they can scrape off a half an inch and make it smooth, even though it wasn't rough. And it, I'm thinking that if some of these fixes, if all this stuff is this simple, it's not going to be that hard to save the money. But
okay,
I mean, it just frustrated the dickens out of me. And
let's go to Margaret on this. Is there a lot of wasteful spending of that nature in the state, do you think, Margaret?
Well, I think we haven't prioritized well, especially in recent years. They haven't used we had a priority committee that was somewhat neutral. It wasn't politically empowered or anything, that literally looked at our highway projects and set the priorities on them. And Governor Doyle has convened it for the first time in his tenure within the last month, I think to take some of the heat off of him on just these types of issues. I think we have to look very seriously. He is right that we originally had some of the best roads in the country. We were the first to have all our county roads paved, and that was because of our milk industry. We had to make sure the milk trucks could get to and from all the farmers throughout the state. And that's why we had great county roads. Well, right now, our interstate and our feeders in to and from the interstate are our backbone. I think it is absolutely incredible what happened, for example, with the zoo interchange this past summer, that it literally was falling down dangerously and had to be closed and rebuilt. I would agree with him. We're always looking to Europe for trains and trains. We ought to look to Europe and see how they build their roads, because they build them to last. We do not put enough into our existing roadways for maintenance. We do not scrutinize the manner in which we build our roads carefully. And I think what I said earlier, benchmarking, getting a standard out there and then building toward it, is what we have to do. But the last thing we have to do is build a railroad to take high-speed trains that won't be high-speed. They'll be mediocre speed, according to the high-speed in the world's concept, and be sure that we have our roadways, which are really our feeders of the economy, of commerce, and of our citizens.
But that deal is done on the high-speed rail, right? I mean, that's going to happen.
No, it isn't.
You don't think it will?
I don't think it will. I think there will be a way for common sense to rule in this, and I don't know why President Obama has that as his highest priority. I really don't know why, because we don't need it in this state unless people, well, I won't even go into that. I don't think we're going to we're going to see it reach fruition, because we can't afford it. Even if our tax dollars from Washington pay for it, our own state tax dollars are going to have to keep it operating as an empty train, as so many of our transit systems now are way under capacity and having to be very strongly subsidized.
All right, Mark, thanks for the call. Eric in Madison, hi.
Hi. hold on. Let me finish my Spam sandwich here. Okay. Because that's what I have to live on is Spam. I'll first start out by saying the definition of fascism is the concentrated private control of the wealth, the propaganda, the mass buildup of arms, and the repression of labor movements. Okay. So anyway, I'll start out with that.
All right, let's go with that because we only have a little while left. Sheila, you want to take this one on?
Well, I don't know if I heard a question, but there's a portion of that that I agree with. And I'll just say this about the train because it's really irritated me. We talked about jobs. We talked about manufacturing. We haven't talked about those jobs in the sense that trains will be manufactured in the city of Milwaukee. Those trains come from a manufacturing center. While everybody is complaining about the train that goes nowhere, the jobs, the actual ability to build something in this city, to affect the jobless rate here, to assist in the jobs that we started this conversation talking about, we have never been a part of that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
That is irritating.
Mm. And the jobless rate is something that really needs to be addressed in this city.
It was about the economy is why we had the turnover. So I think that that conversation is short-sighted as well.
All right. Thank you both so much for being with us. Margaret, thank you.
Well, it was good to be with you.
Yeah, good to have you here. And Sheila, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And thanks, everybody, for all of your calls. I'm sorry we didn't get to all of the emails, but there were tons of them. We change our focus, still midterm election analysis, hour number two, but a focus now on what happened in other states. Doesn't mean we'll neglect Wisconsin, but we'll go beyond. So thanks to Chrissy Pease and Rhonda Fanning, and we'll continue after the news.